I find joy in my life.
By reading quietly.
Through laughter.
Through exercise.
In my hobby of baking.
With my family and friends.
In being in nature.
In running.
In investing in the relationships that bring my life meaning.
When I can put my toes in the sand and hear the crashing of the waves.
Welcome to Joy of Medicine On Call, where we explore the many paths physicians take to find joy in our practice of medicine. I am your host, Dr. Rajiv Mesquita, and I look forward to your engagement in this exciting program. From the Sierra Sacramento Valley Medical Society, please be sure to stay tuned for our five-minute meditation at the end of this episode. Welcome. I'm delighted today to introduce our guest, Dr. Tyler Smith. Dr. Smith is an orthopedic spine surgeon who trained at the University of Reno in Nevada. He then went on to a residency in orthopedic surgery at Ohio, and then subsequently did a fellowship in spine at Stanford. He has since moved down to the Roseville area and practices spine surgery out there. And it is my pleasure today to welcome Dr. Tyler Smith. Welcome.
Thank you. Very much happy to be here.
Great. Welcome. So we're going to start off, Tyler, with trying to get a little bit about your background, because I found that really interesting. Medicine is a second career for you. So what did you do before?
That's right. I worked as a professional whitewater rafting guide running rivers mostly here in the western U.S., yeah. In and out of the foothills up and down northern and southern California. And then from there, we expanded our horizons and took it international and spent a few years chasing the great rivers of the world and the seasons that accompany them and make them runnable at certain flows. So,
Well, what an incredible experience. I recall actually my experience with a guide in the river not too far away. We actually flipped the boat, but I realized a guide is really important. We've had some really good guides who are fantastic, so I'm sure you got a lot out of that.
I really did.
And it sounds like you enjoyed that.
I absolutely did, and I still do. My wife and I still are heavily involved in the river community. We take trips quite frequently.
Well, what made you seek out something else?
The river guide community is enthusiastic as it is, can become a little bit one-dimensional mm-hmm. on occasion, and there are a lot of folks that are quite itinerant and mental and psychological and emotional challenges are not really their typical cup of tea beyond their own adventures.
Yeah.
And I found my capacities for that a little unchallenged. Mm-hmm. And I had always kind of thought I had this other idea of pursuing medicine in my back pocket. It's one of the reasons that becoming a guide was really fun, because I knew I didn't have to count on it to feed my family for the rest of my life. You're always one injury away from being destitute.
But you're sort of doing the same thing. You're guiding people down a different path now.
That's absolutely true.
So it sounds like your passion was always there then for medicine back then.
Yes.
You're always looking to do something in there. And surgery, why surgery?
Surgery, to me, turned out to be a bit of a calling. I didn't really intend to pursue it that way. And like a lot of us that go through our medical training, half the point of third year of medical school and on to the fourth year is to be exposed to different not only opportunities, but disciplines. And then they're almost like sects in medicine, and different character types and different personality types tend to congregate in these communities, and finding one that resonates with you, we should all be so lucky. I approached all of those opportunities as test drives, really. And I'd try to immerse myself in the world of pediatrics and say, this is going to be the rest of my life. And these are the patients that I'm going to be dealing with. These are the complexities and challenges and the rewards, and how does it feel? Do I see this in my future? I didn't really get that resonance until I bumped into surgery, as we all are compelled to do. And I like the immediacy of it. And I like the fact that it felt a little bit higher stakes, and the accountability was a little bit more directly attributable to the person holding the instruments.
Sure, yeah.
And that's something that I had become comfortable with in my guiding career, and something I wanted to explore a little deeper.
Sure, certainly makes sense. And then moving on to what you're doing right now, I know you're in private practice.
I am, yes.
You know, that comes with all its stresses, and it's one of the more difficult endeavors. And what made you choose that path?
Well, private practice for me really gave me, it really came down to cultural influence and what I could do to affect my immediate surroundings and how I wanted patients to be treated,
yeah.
The type of work space, the physical environment that I wanted to be in, mm-hmm. In my clinic setting, being able to manage my teams, so right. to speak, a little bit more accurately. And I've met a lot of people over the years, friends and relatives included, that pride themselves on having one key on their keychain, and they say, this is to my car or my front door or whatever it is. I want no further responsibility. I want nothing. I want somebody else to take care of 100% of it.
Right.
And I've always been a bit of the opposite of that. I'm willing to get involved in different elements of just my life. I don't like to turn over the controls to everybody all the time. So private practice brings with it that burden, as right. you alluded to, but mm-hmm. it's also a tremendous opportunity if you're wired that way to set those agendas.
So you thrive on actually having full control, being able to control your destiny as you move ahead in terms of your practice.
Well, I'm not sure if I thrive or if I tolerate the responsibilities as the mean to an end to control the environment, you know. Yeah. And of course, control is ultimately an illusion in every aspect. But at least feeling as though I have some bearing on my destiny, and I'm not just awash on this, on some tidal flow that's just a mysterious force.
Yeah, and you know, that brings us to an important issue, which is wellness in the physician community. Here you are in a field that is really intense, you know, it can have its stresses, and you're in your own private practice, so you're faced with all kinds of pressures and stresses, yet to me, you look really happy. I mean, you were smiling when you walked in. you look very relaxed, so... how do you do it? I mean, how do you maintain that balance and coordinate everything so that you're still intact?
Well, certainly, you know, there's lots of role models and lots of pathways that you can pursue in any direction, right? I mean, some of the world's major religions and the best philosophies kind of address that for that reason.
Yeah.
And for me, it really comes down to some clear boundaries. Mm-hmm. And another benefit of private practice is that I was able to sculpt my practice to work into my life. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what kind of life I wanted to have and then back my work into it. And I think too frequently, and I might suggest the vast majority of people, especially in our American culture, we try to back our life into our work and our career, and it's totally reversed. And then you can't engineer it in a way that works.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot more effort to do the scripting up front.
Yes.
And then be able to say no to what could be a bright, shiny opportunity that really is just a distraction and is away from whatever compass points you've set for yourself. And,
sure, yeah.
And I connect those boundaries with really, really liking how I spend my days during my work. I find it tremendously satisfying. It's very rewarding. So in a lot of ways, it fills me up.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I have these massive pendulum swings where I am completely vaporized at the end of a work day and then have to swing into some sort of recreation activity where I overdo it and then have to swing back and forth.
So you're actually doing what you enjoy, and you're trying to set it up so that you're focusing around what you enjoy. It may be a lot of work, but it's something you enjoy.
That's right? Exactly right.
Can you describe some of the challenges you might have had to face?
Well, a surgical practice, especially in a spine surgical practice, there are a lot of scenarios that might demand our immediate attention.
Yeah.
And certainly a lot of the traumatic injuries and urgencies have a habit of falling on nights and weekends and holidays.
That's right.
And patients get routed through the EMS system, and then they're dropped in somebody's lap, and somebody has to take care of them. So I figured out early on that I didn't want an emergent, urgent practice. I wanted a referral practice. So Immediately, I started trying to figure out how to get patients without being on a call schedule.
Sure.
And covering the ERs and traumas. And it turns out that it's not all that challenging, but a lot of surgeons in private practice don't really see that as an opportunity. Yeah. And I'm fortunate to work in a hospital setting where my privileges are not tied to taking call coverage.
Right.
So I can still have a facility to take my operations and care for patients and go find them myself.
Fantastic.
So it's a totally different level of relationship building that goes into building a referral practice.
Wow.
And I had some friends and mentors that turned me onto that idea early on, and I embraced it quickly.
Yeah,
brilliant. That has facilitated the balance after that, because my schedule is basically my own.
How many years has it been since you've been practicing?
8 years.
8 years. That's fantastic. Yes. And you've had no issues at all. You've been able to build your practice the way you had designed.
I have had many, many issues and unanticipated challenges. And we'll call them growth opportunities.
Right.
But in a lot of ways, it's really just about mindset. If you take the challenges as reasons and cues to iterate and say, well, that didn't work. A true scientific method. You change one variable, you study the effect, and you correct and keep trying. That's much easier if you have a clear goal in mind.
Right.
And as I mentioned previously, I took some time to create a clear goal.
Right.
And then if it becomes a relatively simple decision-making process. If this decision points me in the right direction, I'll take it. If not, well, is it something that will ultimately serve?
Right.
You know, do I have to invest money, effort, time, attention?
Yeah.
And medical training has a lot of that investment.
It does. That's true.
But as long as it's goal directed, it's going to come around, at least according to the best laid plans, and it all makes sense.
So, you know, that's an interesting point you brought up about having a goal set, maybe even writing it down. I bet you many of us have not done that. You know, we go through our lives practicing as, you know, a rope, just go through each day. But setting up some sort of goal that you actually articulate and then focus your strategy on whatever achieves that, that's pretty much what you're also doing. Is that right?
Completely, yes.
You had it very clearly set in your mind, and you used it almost as a lens as you went forward. If something fit that, you would proceed. If it didn't, then think very carefully about it.
That's exactly right. And also giving yourself permission to change your goal and change your direction as you mature through life or experiences necessitate a course correction.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, that's brilliant. It seems like it's intuitive, but really not. You have to take the time to actually do that.
Yes, and it does not happen by accident. And it's very different than just daydreaming.
Yeah.
You know, and really, like a lot of good outcomes, it's about good process. And I was lucky to have friends and mentors. I hired a business coach right when I came out of training because I recognized that there was an opportunity to get this right once.
Sure, sure.
And I didn't want to blow my chance and have to redo it 10, 15 years in a second marriage later. That didn't sound like any fun at all.
Wow, that sounds like a great idea. And how long did you have the coach for?
I still work with him on occasion. Right. And we have become close friends over the years. And it's a nice way to keep me accountable.
Sure,
Again, just make sure that it's a reinvention process on annual or semi-annual cycle. Just go through what was literally written down. Are we still going this direction?
Yeah, it's always helpful to have someone else look at it and move you forward. And if you think about it, you know, successful teams have great coaches.
Of course.
You know, why shouldn't one of us also have that? And that's, I like that.
Of course.
That's brilliant.
And especially as physicians, that's what we're doing for our patients and our little touch points throughout the therapeutic relationship. And it's odd to me that it's not everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it should be more prevalent, right?
More prevalent. Yeah. And maybe that's something we'll develop in the course of our wellness program here, is some access to some coaches that way.
Yes. Actually, we do have some life coaches available. And our members or physicians in Sacramento can actually access some of them.
That's great.
Yeah. Also, we initially were talking about how do you navigate this difficult, busy lifestyle of physicians with, you know, things coming at you all the time, opportunities coming all the time, and depending upon what you take, you could actually overdo things. Do you say no to things, or are you often saying yes?
Much more now.
Yeah.
And I think that especially when you're building a practice, you have to say yes to a lot of things. And because you don't really know what's going to bear fruit down the road. So you have to plant a lot of seeds.
Right.
And but you also have to recognize when those may be somebody just spinning your wheels or clearly with their own important agenda that may not involve your overall well-being. And, of course, physicians are targets for all kinds of schemes, so to speak. I mean, it's really easy to borrow too much money. It's really easy to get involved in some shiny business opportunity. Of course, our lack of fundamental understanding and formal training on that is well known.
Right.
So we're targets in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And I also had the good fortune of growing up with a father who was he's kind of failing retirement because he's still working very hard, but he is a CPA and financial planner and an MBA.
Fantastic.
Focusing on small medical and dental practices. So,
how fortunate.
Yes. My great good fortune, he's moved here locally to the area and helps me now some of these decisions.
Yeah.
But it has also helped me peel back some of the layers of these once-in-a-lifetime opportunities that feel like once-in-a-lifetime opportunities.
Sure.
Quite frequently or not. Yeah.
And you know, going to a topic that our physicians face all too often with their families, I know you have kids and your family. How do you maintain that balance so that you're taking care of your practice as you are, but at the same time there for your kids and your family? How do you maintain that?
So I'm a huge proponent of quality time and not so much quantity time. Now, quantity is fantastic. I'll spend 10 days on a river trip with my kids and not bat an eye. But the toxic interpersonal environment that we're all living in right now and having these kind of generational changes in raising our kids. To me, it's about screen time, really.
And
we just really minimize screen time in our family. We don't have TVs in the main rooms where we hang out in. So we have a TV, but it's not just always running in the background.
So we
didn't raise them on their smartphones and as pacifiers.
Sure.
So it made some challenges early on because you have to then engage and entertain them, and you're sometimes really busy, and that can be really hard to do. Kicking all of ourselves outside and spending time in the great outdoors without a lot of immediate distractions has engendered a way for us to relate to one another deeply and quickly. So then when we are spending time together, it's about presence.
Sure.
And that is clearly not a new concept, but it's harder and harder with the constant pinging, ringing distractions, physical and emotional. It's a lot of distractions out there.
And I know you have teenagers. No iPhones, I assume?
They do now.
No, they do. Because there might be a revolt.
And now I got to find them. That's the other thing. When they were kids, I convinced them of a couple of things. One, if they stayed in the water too long, they'd grow gills. And two, that I had planted a tracking chip between their shoulder blades so I always know where they are in life.
Well, you're a spine surgeon, right? You could have, right?
So now in some ways that's true. We track them now.
Oh, that's fantastic. So it sounds like quality time. And you're really maximizing quality time with your family so that you remember it, you make these memories you remember.
That's certainly the goal. And I find myself in a position, if I start to come down on my kids, hey, put down your phone, hello, I'm right here. And then 3 minutes later, I'm answering a text or a call or just this one important email or there's one patient that needs help on the floor that's been admitted, whatever it is, my actions speak so loudly they can't hear my words, right?
They're
just going to suddenly be emulating their parents. So
it's
been really important to create those spaces and important times when we're together. It's, hey, everybody out, friends go home, I'm putting down my phone and pager and we're just going to play cards or whatever it is. So the balance there becomes much more achievable because it's so much higher yield when you are together.
Right.
When raising kids, you frequently hear about windshield time, right? That's when the best spontaneous conversations come out, when you're just on a road trip.
In the car, highway, exactly, right?
And that's more challenging now that everybody's got their headphones and their own iPod and they're watching their own movie in the back, right? So you have to defend that space as well. But it's constant vigilance. But the yield is we have a great relationship with one another.
Yeah, It's so true. The other day I had a drive with my son to Yosemite and good conversation in the car. It's also it helped that the cell reception was very poor in the area. So planning that is also good. So, you know, Tyler, let's switch back a little bit to practice. A lot of our physicians face stress in their EMR systems, you know, with the typing out the notes and doing all of that. And,
it's exhausting.
What are your thoughts on that? How do you deal with that?
Well, I work with a scribe in my office. Hmm. And I was an early adopter of using Google Glass for medical application.
How is that?
Yeah. It is fantastic. Hmm. And I work with a company that's a subscription service called Augmetics. In fact, we were the first commercial client with this startup, 4 or 5 years ago now. And my medical assistant had a relative that was involved in this startup at the time. Some way still a startup, but she watched me struggle. Mm-hmm. I'm left-handed, so a right-handed mouse slows me down a lot. I don't type well. Mm-hmm. I really have to focus on what I'm doing when I'm connected to the computer. It's not like some of these folks that can look at you and type and still at least pretend to
exactly.
be paying attention. So when this idea was pitched to me, I said, I'll take it. I'll be a pilot. I want to see what this might allow me to do because now I can just look right at the patient.
Right.
And other than scrolling through imaging, MRI review and imaging review is a huge part of our patient visit, and I try to give them a lot of educational exposure to what we're looking at, read them with them, which is engaging, but I'm not doing anything to interface with the computer at the time, and we get really good feedback from patients about that.
Wow.
Because, again, it goes back to that presence concept. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're heard because I'm listening.
Right, right. You're not typing on a computer.
I'm not typing and
yeah.
saying, I'm sorry, what was that? Could you repeat that? Yeah. Or, you know, check my phone, whatever it is. Because, and if I need a cue, it just comes up. There's a little prism, almost functions like a rear view mirror.
Hmm.
And the scribe, if they have a question or if I've forgotten some element of the exam or history or forgotten to prescribe a medication, whatever it is, she'll trigger.
So she's not in the room, but it's all electronic.
That's
and
right.
There's a camera on it, I assume.
There's a camera and a couple noise canceling headphones. So
wow.
And it's and it's in line with my field of vision, so they can see what I see.
And are they based here?
They are in San Francisco.
Okay, yep. Not too far away.
Yep, not too far. In fact, she's a very bright young woman who's applying to medical school, and she came to visit us in our operating room last Friday. It was kind of fun to have her there in person.
That's great. And everything goes right to your EMR as soon as you...
So the notes are populated basically when I'm done with the patient visit, and
wonderful.
All the CCs are done, and the whole care team is included in the loop. And we've developed a good trust relationship over the years, so I don't need to spend too much time reviewing all the details of what's in the plan. But it's really freed me up to not only not take those charts home with me.
Right, right.
To
it's a huge
3
thing.
Hours a day or a night, which is exhausting. And then you find yourself taking shortcuts and trying to recall notes from somebody that you missed from months ago, and now you're trying to fill in these kind of pseudo details that may not even be accurate anymore. Yeah. And I can also see a couple of more patients in the day, and my breaks don't have to be as long. So I don't I don't have to take a break at lunch 90 minutes just so I can chart and keep up, and then grab a bite, and then try and absorb how far behind I got running in the morning. We can run kind of contemporaneously throughout the day.
There's definitely something refreshing about not having to deal with all that typing and the clerical work. Then you feel like you're doing doctor's work, literally. I mean, you're doing the work you were trained to do.
That's exactly right.
And not the clerical stuff. And you know, you're spending more time with patients.
Yep. So that's been a huge boon to my practice. And I'll tell you, it's not for everybody. And some people don't like the quality of the notes that come out. Mm. You know, they're not your own. Certainly in my own practice, I got to kind of wax poetic about how I wanted the plan to read and every little nuance. And it took a long time. There were good notes, but it took a long time.
Yeah.
And I found that it turned out to be very low yield communication.
Yeah.
And, but it's not without its downsides. I have a harder time remembering patients' names now.
Sure.
Because I don't have to lock into them and then redictate them down the road and read it and say it. It's just I remember them in different ways, but names are different.
Wow, interesting. a different issue, but yeah. You look refreshed. Yeah. I tell you, worth the trade-off.
That's right.
So, you know, another question for you. It brings us to de-stressing. I'm sure you also do some things to de-stress.
Sure.
What do you typically do to de-stress?
Well, I think my happiest places are being physically outside, which honestly is one of the biggest challenges of a career in medicine, is all the sterilized air and the artificial lighting and being stuffed in a broom closet, especially in the operating room environment where we're a couple layers deep in the hospital and you have to kind of fight for your fresh air.
Yeah.
We used to joke that we wanted to be smokers so we could have an excuse to take a smoke break out. And go outside. So we changed that around. Now it's dandelion breaks and we just go out and wander around in the weeds on occasion. So.
Nice. So just going out for a walk.
Going out. I have dogs at home and we like to take them down to the dog park or by the river and like to ride my bike. I still whitewater kayak a lot.
I was going
to
ask you, rafting and kayaking and still
that's
doing
a
that.
Constant opportunity.
Traveling around the world doing that as well?
We do that. In the summertime, we apply for lottery-issued permits to get on some of the longer rivers of the western U.S., and we usually do a trip or two that's a week plus, and they're all self-support camping trips.
So you have those passions of yours that you still pursue.
Absolutely.
Which is outside of medicine and critical. Yes. To maintaining your wellness.
Yes. Yeah. And I think important in that concept are the relationships that are outside of medicine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because these are all our old rafting buddies, and they have their families and their own children now. And maintaining the relationships beyond the inner medical circle, I think, is critically important, at least for me.
Sure, yeah.
And it's one of the reasons I live a little farther away from the hospital than a lot of my colleagues. I don't have to go back and forth to take call. I don't have to be 5 minutes away.
Sure,
because it's one commute one day each day.
Sure,
And I don't have to wear the role of somebody's doctor every time I go to the grocery store or step outside or go for a walk in my neighborhood.
Sure, you can connect in different ways.
That's exactly right. So the passion pursuits are as much about those other communities as anything. And that, you know, when we're talking about balance, that's really it. How are you going to counterbalance somebody who's got all the same gripes as you about the system and the way of the medical world? You can find yourself talking in circles a lot and
that's
you start to get a little bit myopic about it, I think.
That's right. And there's a lot of data on connection, the power of connection, and builds resilience. And it sounds like you found that, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed. I mean, you're in a field that's high stress, you know, high-powered, and you look relaxed and comfortable.
So, don't confuse that with lazy and disheveled, right?
It's fantastic. So do you have any other thoughts to offer us?
Yeah, it's funny. I have a lot of really fun professional opportunities, and I think that's the other side of these kind of predatory sales gimmicks that come at you when you're a doctor, and especially a surgeon. And of course, I deal with implants.
Right.
And orthopedics is heavy in industry relationships, and spine is no exception to that. And what I have found through some of my other consulting work is that there are all these enormous layers of spin-off opportunities to stay engaged. And not just, you know, running my own practice involves a lot of compliance and a whole new skill set of managing people. I don't have an office manager. We have 9 employees, and I do it all without an office manager, partially because I have an extraordinary team. We all work really well together. They don't need managing. They need coordination and teamwork, and we do that together. So, but that's a whole new skill. And
sure,
then working in the design development phase with some of these implant companies and working with some world-class engineers and having access to all these brilliant minds that are nothing like the people that I'd spend my normal medical day with has been really invigorating.
Wow.
And then getting involved in leadership in some of the medical societies and with some of the hospital systems and getting to meet those kind of extraordinary people and flexing some of those other parts of your brain is really satisfying. But it can become a huge time suck.
Sure. Yeah, you can certainly do that.
And I think paring down those opportunities goes back to some of the saying no that you had alluded to previously, because if you're not going to do a good job at it, it's just going to be stressful, and that's what we're trying to avoid. And the things that you're going to be most valuable in are the things that aren't intrinsically stressful to you.
Right.
And being mindful of how it makes you feel, yeah. you're either going to gravitate towards it. It's like trying to get my kid to take out the trash.
Yes.
It takes a lot of reminding.
That's right.
But when they see ice cream on the
or
table.
Or incentives, right. Yeah. That's brilliant. That's actually really good advice, Tyler. You've figured out, you're a sage, you figured out exactly the way to actually put the key into the lock. So for the next phase, I'm going to ask you what we call lightning round questions.
Sure.
It's a series of questions, and whatever comes to your mind will be fine. So the first question, reflect on something that brought you joy in the last week, Tyler.
In the last week, two things come to mind just immediately. My son is traveling internationally for high school right now, and I got a phone call from him. He got some cell phone reception out in the middle of the woods of eastern Canada, his phone number popped up on mine, and I stopped what I was doing, picked that up. So appreciating the long distance connection, you know, here I am kind of out of one side of my mouth bashing on the total connectivity of today's global society, on the other hand, just totally reveling in the miracle of talking to my son. Yeah.
That
was really fun. And I got to spend some time with my wife and daughter. My daughter rides horses, and we had an event here, and that we got to get all the gear together and travel together, and just seeing her ride on her horse is just
it's so great.
It is so great.
Yeah,
it's really fun to spend that time together.
Yeah, and for the listeners, I can see the joy in Tyler's face. He's really describing something that brings him joy. That's so good. So the next question: what is the best advice you ever received?
Always leave a party while you're still having fun.
That is actually really good advice. Yeah.
When I arrived at college, I had a roommate whose dad knew what he had been up to in high school, and he kind of grabbed him by the shirt collar and said, "Listen, always leave a party while you're still having fun, and don't count on being lucky, right? It's easy to feel like you're leading a charmed life when everything goes your way, but hope is not a good strategy."
Right. Exactly. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. The next question: what is a book you can recommend that helped you find joy?
There is a couple, but the one that's got me turned on right now is written by a man named Simon Sinek, and it's called Start With Why. And it's a fascinating exploration in why we do what we do and why good organizations or companies, why some excel. And in a lot of ways, it's a secret sauce to leadership in general, but finding satisfaction in your workplace. And he talks about a concept called the golden circle, which I will leave the punchline to Mr. Sinek. It's actually a remarkable TED Talk. It's one of the most viewed YouTube videos. I want to get this right. I think it's the second most viewed TED Talk ever. It's about 18 minutes long. And I can't get enough of this guy's material. He's remarkably simple. That's on the far side of a complex situation. He's one of these people that just distills it down into the pure essence.
Wow, he just excels in that.
Yes.
And his name again is
Simon Sinek. S-I-N-E-K.
Great. Yeah.
I've been giving those out as gifts lately. There's another book, if I may, called The One Thing. And the author is a real estate mogul. I forget which one of these mega real estate companies he founded, but it again just distills down complex organizational matters into what's the one thing that need to be doing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we can only do one thing at a time.
That's right.
And if you're careful about the one thing that you should be doing and you get it done, you're suddenly effective.
Yeah.
As opposed to the overwhelming to-do list with 80 things on it where you just don't even know where to start.
Where to start. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
It does.
Now, the next question may or may not tie into this, but who is someone you admire?
Oh, wow, that's a long list.
Whatever comes to mind.
You know, tell you, my dad comes to mind quite frequently. Mm-hmm. Both of my parents are just remarkable people, and they have... you know, my dad has a bearing about him that makes him very approachable, and he's an extraordinarily good listener. And he does not often give unsolicited advice, but somehow you feel guided, having spent time with him.
Interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. And it almost feels like a superpower sometimes.
Yeah.
And I have friends from all over the world that when they come to visit, they say, yeah, hi, Tyler. Nice to see you. It's been a while. But you know, where's your dad? Is he around somewhere? And I think I would have to also add my wife to that list as well, because she has what could be the highest EQ of anyone I've ever met. And she is a people person through and through, and she helps me navigate a lot of things that I may be otherwise blind to. And I admire her for that. She's just so extraordinarily perceptive, and she's right just about every time.
Well, it's
a nice ace to have up the sleeve when I go to her for help on something.
That's wonderful, though. Yeah. Wow. What are you most grateful for, Tyler?
I'm grateful for just the remarkable opportunities that I've been afforded in life. And I'm grateful to my, I just am blessed with so many deep relationships all over the place. And, you know, I have no illusions that I'm a native Californian. I'm born into a stable home environment. I enjoy good health without too much effort. And that is, that's a 1% gift, right? And but at the same time, I don't apologize for that. I try to capitalize on and share the best fruits of that as much as I possibly can. And I'm grateful for the connections that people trust me with, because it enriches my life in ways that are treasure.
Wow. Yeah, it certainly seems to me that connections are a very important part of your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tyler, how do you take time for yourself? Do you schedule it in, or what do you typically do?
My calendar says I schedule it in, but then when I look back and review, it's it's typically in the early morning. I was raised kind of inadvertently as a morning person. I was a swimmer and played water polo in college.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So a lot of morning workouts involved in this swim life. Yeah. So I can't sleep in to save my life now, which is thoroughly annoying when I want to. But I will get up early. I like to get up before everybody else and just have a cup of coffee and maybe step outside and just watch the sunrise or the moon set or whatever it is. And just the moments of quiet reflection really go a long ways for me. And when I'm driving, I like to just turn everything off and roll down the window and just feel the world go by. And it can actually be more fulfilling than you would think on just the surface streets of Sacramento.
Not listening to the news or anything, just
you
silence.
I'll check in here and there, but when I really feel like I need to feed the introvert that lives within all of us and in some capacity.
It is refreshing, isn't it? Yeah, just to have it off. Yeah.
And I think just paying attention to what recharges you.
Yeah. That's mindfulness, and just being mindful with that. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Tyler, what is a step listeners can take in the next 24 hours to find joy?
Kill your television.
Just toss it out the window.
Yeah. I mean, start by turning it off.
Right. You know?
I don't know. I think that just the constant barrage that we're assaulted with these days is real. We're not wired that way, you know. And I think about physical trauma this way sometimes. People get in these horrific car accidents and sometimes they'll say something like, geez, I was only going 25 miles an hour. Well, good grief. If you're running 15 miles an hour at a full sprint, put your hands behind your back and smash your face into a brick wall at full speed.
Right.
That's 15 miles an hour. We are not built to be going 70 miles an hour on a freeway. And just we're not built to assimilate all this information simultaneously.
Yeah.
And it really is, it can very quickly become tremendously overwhelming. And you start to have this myopic view of the reality of the world, and study after study supports that what we're exposed to doesn't really reflect our immediate reality, and it's intrinsically stressful because we're powerless to affect it.
Yeah.
And I think that just, I'll say it again, just turn off your TV once in a while.
Great, wonderful. Well, Tyler, time has flown so fast. I almost hate to say we're coming to the end of this podcast, but I'd like to thank you on behalf of the physicians in Sacramento for taking the time to come here today and share your experiences with us.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you so much. Let's begin the body scan. draw your attention to your posture and relax into something comfortable. If you feel more comfortable sitting down with your feet firmly on the floor and your hands by your sides or on your thighs, that would be fine. If you prefer to lie down on your back, that would be fine as well. So please adjust yourself into the position that you're most comfortable with. Now draw your attention to your breath. Pay attention to your breath coming in and out of your nostrils. Slowly draw your attention towards your forehead. Imagine relaxation spreading through your forehead. All the tenseness melting away. Draw your attention to your cheeks. Just feel them relax. Bring your attention down to your jaw. And if you like, open your mouth a little bit as you adjust it. Just feel it relax. Feel the tenseness melting away. If you hear any sounds, just consider them for a minute and then bring yourself back to your jaw. Draw your attention down to your neck. Feel your neck relaxing. This is a part of the body that tenses up during the day. With each breath, just feel the muscles in your neck relax. Draw your attention down to your right shoulder. If you like, you can lift it up a little bit and drop it. Just feel it relax. And with each breath, feel that sense of relaxation moving down to your right elbow, to your right forearm. And then to the fingers on your right hand, starting from the little finger all the way down to your thumb. It's okay to move it a little bit as you feel it relax. Draw your attention now to your left shoulder. Feel that shoulder relax. Feel that sense of relaxation moving down to your left elbow and to your left forearm. With each breath, feel the relaxation moving through the fingers of your left hand, starting from your little finger all the way down to your thumb. If your mind wanders, just bring it gently back to the fingers of your left hand. Draw your attention now to your chest. Just imagine all the tension melting away. As that relaxation moves down to your stomach, with each breath,
Just feel the many muscles of your stomach start to relax. Draw your attention to your back, starting off at the upper back, both shoulder blades. With each breath, feel them relax. Feel this sensation moving down to your lower back. With each breath, just feel the sensation spread and the tension melting away from your lower back. Draw your attention to your right thigh. Just feel the tension melting away as your attention moves down to your right knee. Down to your right shin, your right ankle, and your right foot. It's okay to wiggle your toes a little bit as you feel that whole right foot relax. Draw your attention now to your left thigh. Feel that sense of relaxation moving down to your left knee, down to your left shin, left ankle, and then the toes on your left foot. Take a moment now as you pay attention to your body, as the tension melts away. Draw your attention back to your breath as you inhale and exhale. Gently, at your own pace, you can open your eyes and enjoy the rest of the day, or continue sleeping if you are sleeping and it is the evening. Thank you. Please be sure to visit our website at joyofmedicine.org, where we have many more materials on wellness.